The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome everyone to day two recap of the Tyler Robinson preliminary hearing. I'm Josh Carr, if you're just joining us, but I'm assuming you know who I am already. Welcome everyone in the chat. I could see a lot of you are here already. We're streaming live to YouTube and X right now. And wow, today was massive. If you're watching this live or you're watching this back, this was a much bigger deal and a much bigger day than day one. The beginning of the day was all me. And I'm going to be breaking it all down in an hour because if you are a psycho and you watched all 8 hours of it, you already know what happened. But you don't have time for that. Most of you do, or you do not, rather. And so you are going to get it all in an hour with us today. I'll be taking your questions. If you want your question to be featured, please leave a super chat below. I'm just not going to be able to get to all of them today. It does help me continue my work. I do appreciate it. I'll also be putting these recaps out on Spotify and Apple. And so if you would like to listen because you prefer that, you can always go to Spotify and Apple. All of my shows, including the live ones, are over there as well. We do have a super chat really quick to start off. I do want to recognize you. Jewel Sweet 99, thank you so much for the super chat. You said the silent majority has placated the loud and obnoxious for too long. We're capable of societal degradation if we don't push back against the narrative. That is exactly right. And that is what the theme of today is going to be. Everything that we saw in this court hearing is a repudiation of what Candace Owens has been talking about. Much of what we saw today, actual evidence, and I've got some things to show you, is exactly the opposite of what Candace has been selling. Things that she specifically has said were not true, and we saw it with our own eyes, and the prosecution did a very good job. So with that, let me get into my notes. We've got a lot. Again, today was far from boring. We saw tons of evidence. We saw lots of interesting cross-examination. Just so you guys know where we're at overall, that first stream, I know a lot of you messaged me and said, oh, we weren't able to see that stream. The reason why you weren't able to see it is it was copyright stricken or copyright struck or however you want to say it. That is what we're up against, guys. It was copyright struck by a company that has absolutely nothing to do with anything that was on screen ever, because anything I showed on screen was public. It was allowed. I made sure of it. I consulted legal people about this. This is something that I've learned about in when I got my journalism degree about how pool networks work. And another company stepped in and copyright struck it because essentially that's just what we can do now on YouTube. I can make a video about how that works, but you don't even have to have someone's content in order to copyright strike them. And you can essentially shut down any channel if it's a news channel. And the reason I say that is because that copyright strike will not stand, but it gets to stand for 30 days, in which case news will no longer be relevant. That's how they get away with this. But with that, let's get into things. And I'm going to talk about me getting into the courtroom as well, by the way, because I will be in the courtroom later this week. We have to change our strategy just a little bit. Things have gotten a little crazy, but we'll save that for a little bit down the road. And if you didn't know, we will have someone who is in the courtroom joining us on the stream today. If you would like to join the stream, you can go to carmediacompany@gmail.com. I will send you the stream link and you can call in. You can ask any questions. You can also debate me on something if you really want to. I wouldn't recommend it because I and some of the other psychos in the chat today are probably some of the only people who have watched all 16 hours of the court. So we know it pretty well at this point. But with that, let's get right into what happened. David Hull was the second witness of this case. David Hull was continuing his testimony, and this is where it got really good. We started where we left off. You'll remember last night where we were at was that they were not able to show some video because it had some circling and some zooming. And the defense really hated that. And even the judge didn't love it. And so he said, do you have the raw footage? They said, we don't have it prepared. We're going to need to come with it tomorrow. And so that's exactly what they did. They came with the raw footage. The defense basically argued that these videos, and they continue to argue this because they were very worried about this video that they would show. Even though they brought the raw footage, we still had to go through this shenanigan of the defense arguing that these videos would taint the jury pool. So it couldn't be shown to the media. That's what their whole argument was. They already had gotten rid of the circles and the zooming. And this argument was struck down because, of course, that could apply to literally anything that you want it to. It's not a legitimate argument. And so they played the video. And what this video was, is it was of Tyler Robinson showing up to UVU not once, not twice, but four separate times. Tyler Robinson came once to stake it out. I think it was at about 8 or 9 a.m. Came again towards 11 a.m. This time he also decided to stake out the woods, the wooded area where he later stashed the gun. And then the third time he climbed up on the roof. We have the video of all of this. And then the fourth time he came back to UVU later that night. And what Sergeant Hull is talking about is he is showing these videos and he is also describing how he has seen dozens of hours of footage and traced the entire scope of how Tyler Robinson has gone throughout UVU. Basically, he's saying we've seen it all, which is something, by the way, Candace Owens has said repeatedly is not true. She has over and over again said that Tyler Robinson was never at UVU. We have 100% certainty he was there. Sorry, I see a quick question in the chat. Is there a place to watch previous streams of the court? There is a place you can now watch my stream of the court. It's just in the live section of my YouTube channel. You can watch today. Unfortunately, you cannot watch day one because it was copyright struck. If you want to do that, I'm not really sure where you could, but I'm sure they're out there. So here's what I want to do, guys. I want to show you some of these videos that they showed in court. Some of these are very long, so I'm not going to go through all of them. But here is the first two times Tyler Robinson came to UVU. Some of this footage has never been shown before. It's very clear that it's Tyler Robinson. And so here we are reacting to them together. This is what they showed in open court. Here we go.
And why, well, let me ask you this. You believe this is Mr. Robinson returning to campus?
I do, yes.
Okay. And why do you believe it's Mr. Robinson?
The shoes are the same. And the images that we have are from my viewing and seeing Mr. Robinson on the video, it's the same person.
He's noticeably wearing different clothing.
He is wearing different clothing, and he also is walking with a gait or a limp in this video.
With a gait or what?
Limp.
Okay, so that was the third time. Tyler Robinson suddenly looks different. We're going to show you the first one right here. And he has a limp. Now watch the first video. This is the first time he came to campus. Look what he's wearing. And does he have a limp?
Screen agents. All right. All right. Mr. Sturgill, you may proceed.
Appreciate that, Judge. Thank you. Go ahead. Okay, what are we seeing here, Agent Hall?
That's the vehicle that is believed to belong to Mr. Robinson arriving in the parking garage on campus.
At what time in the morning? What time of the day?
Just so you guys know, I know a lot of people were talking about this. The reason why they know that vehicle is Tyler Robinson's is they were able to get the make and model and the license plate, and it is registered under his name and the name of his mother.
Approximately 8:30 in the morning on September 10th, 2025.
And what leads you to believe this particular vehicle belongs to Mr. Robinson?
Information that was provided regards to driver's license and Department of Motor Vehicle records. The vehicle fits the description of a vehicle owned by Mr. Robinson.
Is there anything unique about that vehicle that stands out to you?
The shape of the vehicle is very distinct, but predominantly the wheels were very distinctive on this version of the vehicle.
Now what do we see?
The driver of the vehicle exits the vehicle and then walks on foot to exit the parking garage. It's the individual in the red t-shirt and the shorts and the shoes.
And do you believe you recognize who that person is?
Yes.
Who is that?
I believe that's Tyler Robinson.
All right. Where does he go from there?
He heads out of the parking garage on foot into the campus and actually goes to the quad area of the campus. At that time, he makes contact with some representatives from TPUSA.
Like quad area?
Sorry, the amphitheater is what I previously referred it to.
So he goes up on campus, visits the amphitheater area, the courtyard or quad.
Correct.
And then what do we see here now?
He returns on foot back to the same vehicle.
And what time is he returning back to the vehicle?
It's about 9:25 a.m.
Okay, so you can clearly see it's him. You can clearly see when he comes back, it's him. Some people have paused the video and enlarged it. It's clearly him. I mean, anyone saying it's not is just being ridiculous. And what I find interesting about that, and something I want to point out, is that Candace Owens has never shown that footage ever. So either she never had it, in which case her investigation kind of sucks, or she withheld it, knowing it looked bad for Tyler Robinson. And the thing that the defense cannot answer, and also the Candace Owens fans, is why does Tyler Robinson suddenly have a limp? Because they have made the case in court, essentially, that nobody saw Tyler Robinson with a gun. People saw Tyler Robinson with a limp. They saw him holding something very long in a towel, but they didn't actually find a gun. And that's supposed to be the defense. We have no answers for that. It's very clear at this point what is going on. But that was the biggest bombshell of the day, was showing all that surveillance footage. There were two more videos of each time that Tyler Robinson showed up. One of those was at night after the crime. I'm not going to show that because there just wasn't anything to it, really. You can just clearly see him show up at night. It is what it is. It's dark. The other time is when he shows up. They have the entire footage of him parking, running up to the roof, being at the roof, and then running back down. And I really want to show this, but I cannot show it to you guys. And the reason why is because you can't really see the video. And the reason why this is so important is this was, of course, a topic of discussion in court today and yesterday for like 2 or 3 hours of them wanting to show to the public and to the court this same video, but enhanced with circles and zooms. Because without it, it's very difficult to see. Now, don't worry. In trial, this will for sure happen. And I think as the public, because it's not graphic, we'll be able to see it too. But they were not willing to show it today. The judge did not rule that it was necessary, just because he felt that they had already shown it. And so I can't actually show that to you, but you can barely see, if you take the time to enhance it yourself, that Tyler Robinson does indeed climb up the roof with a limp and stay there for about 15 to 30 seconds, which, as we'll get into in a second, is very important, and then climb back down, and he actually kind of drops his gun in his towel and then runs off. Now, the reason why the 15 to 30 second thing is really important. And again, guys, if you do want to support the channel, please leave a super chat below. I'll also answer any questions that you have. It does help me just continue my work and watch the 8 hours, et cetera, every day and get into the courthouse, which we'll talk about in a second. Sorry, I do have a few people who are messaging me about potentially calling into the show. I'm just looking into that really quick. We do have some people calling in just a second, as well as someone who is inside the courthouse who'll be able to talk to us. But one of the things that really matters is that Hull explains on cross-examination, the defense gets to now question him, and this was really interesting, is he explains that Tyler Robinson was, according to the footage, on the roof for about 15 to 30 seconds. And what the defense is trying to do here is they're trying to say there was not enough time for Tyler Robinson to be on the roof and take a shot at Charlie Kirk. They're essentially saying maybe Tyler Robinson was up there just to watch. Maybe he went up there to watch and then he heard a gunshot and he got scared and ran down. The problem with that narrative is what immediately comes into my mind is I realize that what are the odds that Tyler Robinson was there just to watch. What are the odds that he just got up onto the roof and immediately, within 15 seconds, again, according to the cross-examination, happened to be an assassination, and he immediately got back down? That's the part that's very suspicious. Like, you would think that he would have gotten up there at the beginning of the event to watch the entire thing. That's not what he did. So I don't think that's what the defense wanted. I think their cross-examination had the opposite effect. One interesting question they did have today is they asked, again, this is still Sergeant Hull from the first day. They asked him about a trooper on duty who saw a handgun in a holster. He said he didn't remember. Again, I find this very interesting. It's very clear the defense wants to promote this close range pistol narrative. I think that's an interesting narrative. I'm curious if that means at trial, they're going to argue Tyler was there to just watch Charlie. And then again, he ran off that someone, their whole argument is he just watched someone from the roof shoot Charlie with a pistol. But the prosecutor then was able to go back to testifying, or rather to asking the witness questions. And this is where things got really good, because they were able to put this whole holster bullets on the ground thing to rest. Basically, the prosecutor asked this investigator if any bullets were found on the ground, and he said yes. And the prosecutor made it clear that there were hundreds of officers with rifles. He went into this whole spiel. I'm not going to get into it. It took like 30 minutes long, but basically how it works is most of these officers had rifles, and the policy is that they actually do not have a bullet in the chamber. Therefore, for there to be loose bullets or even a holster lying around would be quite reasonable, considering you're in an open carry state where students there at UVU are allowed to conceal. And you also had hundreds of officers that had bullets, but that were not chambered in their rifles. So that kind of just destroyed the narrative from the defense that there could be another shooter in the area. He also said that Robinson went to the wooded area on the second and the third time to UVU. That was new information. The fact that Tyler Robinson had been caught on camera staking out the wooded area, that was very, very interesting. We do have a super chat here that I do want to address. Snickers Mom said, what was Taylor demeanor like in court today? It's difficult to see Tyler. Are you talking about Tyler, I'm assuming? I guess I should clarify before I go on. Snickers Mom, if you could put in the chat real quick. I'm just going to assume for a second you mean Tyler. What was Tyler's demeanor? He was not caught laughing this time as he was before. So that was probably a good move for him. I think that, you could really only see the back of his head. He didn't look any more happy or sad. I think he knows he's going to prison for life. Best case scenario, he's just not sure if he's going to be executed or not. So it's difficult to see. You know, like I said, I'm going to try to be in the courtroom later this week. We'll get into how I'm going to do that in a little bit, but I will definitely give you guys all the analysis on what he looks like when I do that. That's the real purpose of me being there, right? Like, I can hear everything through the stream. I don't need to be there to get information, but what I want to see is how are all the people reacting to this? We have another super chat from Wanda Poe. Thank you so much for the $50 donation. I really appreciate it. If you have any questions, please put them down below. I would love to answer them for that donation. If there are any others and you'd like any questions asked by anyone, please leave a super chat. But other than that, I'm going to continue with this recap because there were some other bombshells here. Now, sorry, I just want to look through these things really quick so I don't repeat myself. We got to a different place in the trial that was very interesting. The prosecution has done a very good job of laying this out very succinctly, very slowly. First off, they talked about, was there a shot by a rifle? They proved that. Then they started going into, was there footage of Tyler Robinson? We proved that. These are very basic things. The next was, let's talk about Tyler Robinson's motive. And this is where things got very heated today. Like, very heated, and it lasted hours. The defense attorney was trying to throw out evidence that had to do with Tyler Robinson being motivated by Charlie Kirk's religion. Essentially, the prosecution wanted to present evidence that showed that Tyler Robinson hated Charlie Kirk, which we all know, because of his Christian beliefs, but also because of the politics that are downstream of those beliefs. There was a huge debate on trying to throw this out. I'm not going to get into the weeds of it. It literally took hours, guys. Like, took hours. And I listened to all of it. We also had the news attorney that spoke up. Now, this is something a lot of people don't know. It's not just the prosecution. It's not just the defense. There's also a news attorney there. And this is actually a really cool job. If I went into law, this is probably what I would go into. But they are there to ensure that our rights are protected, that the public and the media are able to see things. And so they came into this and they said, no, we got to show this. We got to show this. And they had a huge impact on showing the motivation of Tyler Robinson, which I will talk about in just 1 second. But we have two super chats that I do want to address. First off, we have Blah Blah Smile for $4.99. Blah Blah Smile, by the way, one of the psychos who decided to watch the full live stream with me yesterday and today. So kudos to you, psycho. You said, do you think the defense accidentally helped the prosecution? Yeah, 100%. I mean, I talked about it with them cross-examining Sergeant Huell about the 15 to 30 seconds that Tyler Robinson was on the roof. By the way, plenty of time to take a shot that he missed, by the way. A lot of people don't talk about that, but generally when you're trying to assassinate someone, you aim for the head or the chest. He missed, he hit the neck. It was still lethal, but clearly that's not where he was aiming for. And that makes sense since he was on the clock. In other ways, I do think they helped the prosecution, and we'll get into those in just a second. I do think they looked very suspicious most of the time. From Tam Tammy, thank you for the $2 donation. I really appreciate it. If you have any questions, please leave them down below. I will get to them. And we do have Rachel, the Riveter, who is moderating today. So Rachel, if I miss something from someone who left a super chat, please tell me. And she's been fantastic. She's really knowledgeable. Ask her anything. Jason Stoker said, Josh, we'll send food delivery via DoorDash to the courthouse to make sure you get the fuel to keep going. All right. Well, you super chatted it. So let me take a break really quick on the analysis of what happened today to talk about this. I am going to go to the courthouse. And by the way, we do have someone calling in, CJ, who I know well. And we're going to have him call in just a second. But I am going to go to the courthouse on Thursday. Here's what happened last night, guys. I had some people I know go to the courthouse. The first person, and there were only 14 seats available in the courthouse. The first person who showed up was at midnight. The last seat to go went at about 3:30 to 4 a.m. That's the intel that I've gotten. That is insane. So tomorrow is only going to be a half day. It starts at 1 p.m. Do not show up at 9 a.m., guys. Don't come to the stream. There's not going to be anything here. It's only a half day. So I decided I'm not going to show up that early for half of a day. I'm going to show up for the whole day. So at 2:30 a.m., I will be going to the courthouse on Thursday, and I'm going to get in. And it's going to suck, but it's going to be okay. So yes, if you want to send me a DoorDash, absolutely do it. I will accept that. I'm actually going to be doing interviews from the courthouse, so I'm not even going to be able to leave during the breaks. There's like a one-hour break. I'm not going to be able to leave. I'm going to be doing an interview with Jillian Michaels. Yes, The Greatest Loser, if you remember her, big fan of the show. I will be doing an interview with Jillian Michaels. I'll be doing an interview with a few others, which is very exciting. I'm very excited for all of that. So thank you. If you send me a DoorDash, I will accept. We have a few more super chats before we get to our first call-in, and then I will continue on with the analysis of the court day as we get into the motives of Tyler Robinson. Alexis Fair, 3069, said, no question, just a thank you for your work. Thank you. I do appreciate that. Thank you so much. Andrew Goodcamera, $5, said, my wife and many of the witnesses were there at midnight. They were determined to get it. Yeah, I know your wife. I met your wife, which is awesome. She's great. This is a great testament to the difference in the people who support the truth and the Candace Owens fans. To my knowledge, none of the people who have waited for 14 minutes are Candace Owens, or excuse me, who have waited midnight in to be those 14 people have been Candace Owens fans. They are Erica Kirk supporters. They are truth supporters. Those are the kind of people who actually do hard things. Your wife is one of them. So that's pretty amazing. Thank you so much for your donation and your support. I do want to bring in our guest. Let's bring him in right now. We have CJ Cox, and then we'll get to the rest of it. CJ, welcome to the show. Do you have a question? You want to debate something? What's up?
Yeah, how's it going? Appreciate you having me on here. Sorry, I just want to get a little bit more lighting on that. Can you hear me good?
I can hear you great.
Awesome. So first of all, just want to say thank you for what you're doing here. This has been actually very awesome. I've watched the whole live stream in both of these. I haven't been commenting much because I've been at work throughout most of them, but my boss allows me to at least have it on.
Wow.
So I had a question, though, regarding... Now, for context, so everybody knows, I am not in the whole Candace crowd. I'm very much in the Tyler Robinson did it crowd. What I've been looking for is potential, like, points of stress that I think that she might exploit rather than the prosecution themselves. And one of the big ones was yesterday when Officer was talking about how his camera died, his body cam died. So my question for you is, well, first of all, do you think that's something that we should kind of like prepare to debate against here in the, you know, in the podcast field? For those of you who don't know, I also do one. And of course, you've been taking on Candace for quite some time. And are there any other points where you've thought to yourself, ah, man, I might have to address that when Candace brings it up in 2 to 3 days or whatever?
Yeah, I'll 100% address it. It's definitely circulating on X right now. There's a lot of people talking about it. And to a certain point, I understand why. I think it is, you know, a legitimate critique. Now, people are saying that that just completely absolves Tyler Robinson of all guilt, which right. is funny. I think, so first off, just to address it head on, I think body cams die all the time. I think people need to be well equipped right. with how often that happens and be familiar with those things. That's something I'll endeavor to do. However, in terms of the trial itself, I think that the prosecution probably needs to hopefully see that online and realize maybe we shouldn't focus on that witness for the trial, knowing the suspicion around that. What they could focus on instead, and this is what we can do with Candace Owens, is talk about, okay, sure, the body cam footage was dead, so maybe we don't have concrete proof of the moved gravel on the ground. That is just, you know, his word against Tyler Robinson's, I suppose. But we have actual video of Tyler Robinson climbing the roof,
right?
Up, you know, climbing up from the ground and then climbing back down. And you can clearly see that he's holding a weapon with him. So that's what I would focus on. Maybe, you know, the best way to debate that would just be simply to say, hey, fair enough. Yeah, maybe that officer doesn't know what he's talking about. Maybe that officer is even corrupt. I'll go as far to say that. But now let's bring in this new piece of evidence. What do you say to that? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any other pieces of information so far? I haven't been able to think of any, but are there any other pieces of information so far that you felt like we might be hearing back in the feedback loop?
I think there's one, and I'll touch on it at the end because it happened at the end of the trial, or excuse me, of the preliminary hearing today. So I'll address that a little bit later. I think some people will bring it up, but honestly, I think the prosecutors have done a very good job, and the defenders, I don't think the defense has done a bad job. I just don't think they've got like anything to go off of. So it's tough. They've got a tough job.
Yeah, well, and to be fair, that is, it's good that you distinguish between those things because it seems like they're fairly good lawyers, but it's just pretty overwhelming, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
One thing I wanted to note, this is not a related to the trial itself, but related to some of the conspiracy theories, is we now have multiple streams of confirmation that there is no exit wound, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you've heard the lapel mic thing, which is ridiculous, and I'm going to be even addressing it myself here soon because it's a completely insane theory. But the most recent talking point you're hearing is that Charlie's neck is actually the exit wound. But the problem is, of course, there's still only one wound. So they're saying there's no entry wound and yet an exit wound. It's like one of the most insane things. I mean, it's scientifically actually impossible to have no entry wound but have an exit wound. So I was curious if you had heard that and if you had any comments on that also.
I've heard it. I mean, the only way that you can really rectify any of these things being true is you would have to say that the coroner and multiple people performing the autopsy at Timpanogos Hospital were in on it. You'd have to say that the sergeant was in on it. Like, it's so many people that had never met before. There's no evidence they've ever met before. They don't have any ties to Israel or even the federal government, by the way. I mean, I incorrectly said that Sergeant Hull was part of the federal government. He was not. As we'll get into a little bit later, the only witness that's part of the federal government is an FBI agent so far that was called to talk about DNA evidence, but everyone else has been an agent of Utah.
Yeah, and on that note, so, and yesterday you were saying it seems like, and judging from what I've heard from your streams, it seems like this will probably be true, that the defense might go with the idea that he was shot by a handgun close up. Are there, if you were to put yourself in a defense lawyer's position, how do you think, like, what do you think is the best way to argue that point? The reason I'm asking is because it sounds to me like, obviously, they have to come up with some kind of defense. So I understand why they're doing it, but it just seems like it's so impossible given the evidence that's even been presented already.
Yeah, so, well, I do think that they're being a little extra about it in the preliminary hearing because they, like, it's just not going to work no matter what. But I don't, you know, maybe that's just one of the narratives they're going to go through. They don't need to necessarily tell anyone what happened. They just have to convince people that it isn't what the prosecution is saying. And so I think over the course of what's probably going to be like a 3-month trial or even longer, they just need to sow enough doubt in jurors and come up with 20 different crazy theories. And so long as one juror believes one of those theories, it's good. It doesn't have to necessarily be that one specifically.
Are you confident they can do that? Or do you think the prosecution's, I mean, I think the prosecution's made a good case so far, personally.
Yeah, I am not concerned as of now. I think the prosecution is doing a good job. I think there is a nominal chance that the death penalty will not be enforced. I think the odds of a conviction, at least for a life sentence, are very, very high in a year. And part of that is just going off of my personal knowledge of Utahns.
Yeah, so, and this is kind of the last point, but I might want to go back and forth on this a little bit if you don't mind. So
we got, just so you know, we've got about 5 minutes. We've got another guest joining here in just a sec.
Absolutely. So we know, of course, that Mr. Lance Higgs was discussed quite a bit today. My understanding is that he's been given some level of immunity for his testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Now, immunity very much sounds like you have something to be immune from. So do they suspect that there was some kind of not conspiracy in the way that the Candace and everybody's talking, but that Tyler himself may have been involved in a greater conspiracy and Lance Twix potentially also?
Yeah, I 100% think that's what the prosecution believes. We're going to get into Lance Twiggs in just a little bit as we go into some of the DNA evidence. But 100% there was conspiracy to murder between Twiggs and Tyler Robinson, in my opinion. And I think that for whatever reason, they decided to go after Robinson on his own, hoping, I think, that they can get the maximum sentence for him. Maybe they felt like they couldn't quite do that without giving Twiggs immunity. But those are questions that I would like, you know, those are answers rather that I would like to get from the prosecution one day.
Yeah, and I agree with that tremendously because, you know, Matt Walsh has been talking about this in particular since like 2 days after the assassination happened. And he was pointing out how there were a lot of people, particularly on TikTok in the trans community, who seemed to know something was going to happen. Now, that could totally be coincidence because, to be honest with you, I've been on TikTok enough to know that there are insane people saying insane things before virtually every event.
Right.
At the same time, though, it is interesting to me to see, we know he was discussing, you know, this, the potential for this assassination in a Discord server with friends. And we have immunity being given to his partner. I don't know. It just, there is a feeling I have of like, maybe there was a conspiracy and then Tyler went rogue. And so that's why they only want to charge him is because it was all just quote unquote locker room talk, only it would be obviously Discord. But it's fascinating to me. And it does make me wonder, considering how much we've had over the last couple of years with, you know, the Covenant school shooting and the shooting in the Minnesota Catholic Church. I can't remember what it was called. I think the Annunciation is what that church was called, but I'm not 100% sure. It just makes me curious, you know, is there domestic terror cells kind of brewing? I tend to be inclined, yes, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the prosecution with a massive case like this that's public really is under just a tremendous amount of pressure. And so if there's anything they, you know, any chance they think that Tyler Robinson is not going to get convicted, they're not going to take that chance. And so I think maybe that trade-off with Twiggs that they maybe wouldn't do in a normal trial was being like, fine, we'll give you immunity if you can give us something that's just so damning on Tyler Robinson, because otherwise we're going to get destroyed by the public for screwing this up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Last question regarding to this, and I'll let you get to your other guest. And thank you very much for your time, by the way. My big concern with this, if I'm being perfectly frank, and I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but is that we might be missing the forest for the trees if there is something to this idea of conspiracy. Then it's possible there could be a bigger threat later on. And this is something that we see happen all throughout history where somebody wants to, they want to get the pelt on the wall, so to speak. And so they kind of gloss over the fact that, like, hey, if he's talking to other people, how do we know this doesn't happen again in the future? So my final question then is, are you at all worried that this might be indicative of some larger movement of leftist terrorism in the United States?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, this is one of the main problems that I have with what Candace Owens has been spewing is by defending Tyler Robinson, she enables all of these leftist killers that want to do this. I'm happy there haven't been more copycat murders. I thought there would be more in the last 9 months. So that is, you know, somewhat reassuring. But it's a huge concern I have. And it's to the point where I've taken more security measures for myself, for example. So, yeah, I mean, and who knows what the FBI is stopping every day. I have my own problems with the FBI from time to time, but I do tend to believe that they stop a lot of these things. And we've seen some evidence over the last 9 months of that.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And the UFC event was a big one.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. Well, thank you so much for joining, CJ. Appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, guys. We have Ava Terry. I'm going to have her join in just a second, but I want to introduce who she is. Also, if you guys have any super chats that you want to leave below, if you do have any questions for myself over anything that CJ just said, again, we're going to take a pause from reviewing the trial to talk to Ava because Ava was inside of the courthouse yesterday. So without further ado, I'm going to add her to the stage right now. Ava Terry, welcome. Ava and I went to school at BYU.
Yes, we did. It's good to see you, Josh, again.
Good to see you. And you're a reporter for the Deseret News, correct?
Yes.
Will you just tell the people right now, just right off the bat, where they can find your work over at Deseret News? Just because I've read a lot of your stuff. You broke the story about Charlie Kirk being assassinated over there, I believe. So I'm just curious where people can find you.
Yes. So if you just go to Deseret News, or sorry, Deseret.com, or you can just type in my name, which is E-V-A-T-E-R-R-Y on the screen. Very easy to find. Also, I'm on X. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I've gone through the recap of yesterday already, and we're about halfway through the recap of today. But what people are really curious about is what are people seeing inside? What are the reaction from Erica Kirk? So maybe let's start with her, and then we'll go to the defense in a second. What is the reaction from Charlie Kirk's parents? What are they feeling? What is happening inside of the courtroom?
So, yes. So yesterday it was difficult being in the courtroom because the first two rows of the gallery were filled by Charlie Kirk's friends and family. So they took, so it went Erica's or Charlie Kirk's parents and then Erica's mom. So she was sat between her mother and her mother-in-law, and then it was her sister. And then I think it was her sister's husband, but I'm not totally sure. And then there was Jack Posobiec and Donald Trump Jr. and several women that came with them. And then the second row was people close to Charlie, whether that's extended family or friends. So there were a couple of moments during the hearing that were really difficult to watch. Erica especially and his parents, because they showed three videos that were very graphic, as I'm sure you guys have already talked about. So the first two videos included footage actually of Charlie being shot. And I'm sure that Erica had warning. So her entire family stood up very quietly and just left. And then came back in. So they were in and out through the whole thing. So, I mean, there was video shared of Erica leaving, but they were in and out multiple times. So during that first video, the man in front of me who said he was a personal friend of Charlie's put his head down on the bench in front of him. They just played the audio. It's too graphic to show, and I'm sure you and many of your viewers have actually seen it or were there, EVU. But they just did the audio, and all of us knew where it was leading up to, like where the gunshot would go off, and it was just very, very tense and solemn in the room.
And what was the reaction to the defense when that happened? Because it's not like they're arguing that what happened to Charlie was a good thing. They're acting as if Tyler Robinson didn't do this. Did they act shocked as well?
No. I don't think there was any surprise coming from anyone, to be honest, except for maybe Tony Graf. I'm sure you've seen the video of him kind of flinching when the shot went off. But no, and Tyler Robinson's family was in the fourth row, so they're behind me. And his dad is just very, very stoic, as I'm sure I would be too if I don't know. I cannot imagine what it's like being in their shoes right now. But so it was Tyler Robinson's dad and Tyler Robinson's mom, and then some of his mom's friends and sisters are kind of their entourage. And I don't know how to explain it. It was just very difficult for them to watch Charlie's friends suffering, seeing the video. I mean, it was just a very raw human moment, I think, for everyone in the room. And I mean, there were tears from Charlie's friends in that time. There was no interaction, though. I have not seen the Robinsons and the Kirks interact, either leaving or coming in. I don't know if they've talked to each other outside of the court, but there has been like zero interaction during the actual hearings.
Tell me, not it doesn't have to necessarily be specifically about that moment towards the end of the day when they were showing more graphic content, but tell me how Tyler Robinson's demeanor was during court. Was he focused? Was he, I don't know, what was his posture like? We can see him a little bit. He's the one that we can see easiest, but we can't really see his face ever.
I think the time that he has been most engaged is when they were going through the route for the alleged killers, that the killer took through the campus. So he was like leaning forward and very, very engaged at that point. He is also very calm. He doesn't really talk. I mean, sometimes you can see Catherine Nestor, his defense attorney, leaning over and whispering to him. And actually, at a different point in a procedural hearing before the preliminary started, Catherine Nestor came over and gave Tyler Robinson's brother some chocolate. I haven't seen Tyler Robinson's brother during the preliminary hearing, but it's interesting seeing, okay, at first, like these people were not comfortable with each other, and at this point, they've spent so much time with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the time that I saw him most engaged was through the route.
Tell me about the judge too, from your perspective. You know, I from my perspective, he just seems incredibly fair, incredibly thorough as well. Is there any feeling? You know, I definitely today people were getting pretty heated, not with the judge, but between each other. I think we saw a little bit of that yesterday. Were emotions high in there in an angry way between the prosecution and defense? And do you feel like the judge has done a good job of kind of curbing that?
Yes, it's interesting. Through the day, I feel like, I mean, Tony Graf has such an enormous amount of patience for everyone,
Yeah.
more than I would have. Like, there are moments where either like Novak, one of the defense attorneys, is going on for a long time, and everyone knows that he is, I don't know. So he's just like going for a long time, and Tony Graf is just like very, very much patient with everyone. But through the day, you can tell his patience wanes a little bit. So, like at
Yeah.
the end of the hearing today, when they were just going over DNA evidence and it was just getting really into the weeds, yeah, I think his patience was thin. I think everyone's patience were growing thin. But yes, the amount of patience that he has is absolutely incredible.
I saw the same thing. Yeah. I mean, the DNA stuff got a little crazy. We're going to talk about it in a second. Before you go, though, Ava, is there anything that maybe nobody's really seen that you've seen that you want to share with the audience of what's happening inside the court?
Yes, and I think something that is surprising that's happening inside the court is the same thing that we've been seeing just online and anyway, I was sitting waiting to go back into the courtroom during one of the 15-minute breaks, and there was they let in public, so I was sitting next to this woman who just came because she was curious. She has grandchildren. She like lives in Utah County, and she started talking about Erica Kirk and critiquing her. She was like, I don't know why this woman told me, like, I don't know why she looks so stern all the time. And I was like, do you know, like, what she just had to watch? Like, she, I don't know. So I just wish people realized that these people are real, you know?
And yeah.
Like, we all watched videos of Charlie. If you're Gen Z, like, you have seen videos of Charlie Kirk, and he seems kind of like this entertainment figure. And even for the people who were at UVU, like, I don't know. The people in that room, from Erica to Tyler Robinson's parents, they're all real humans, and they're all going through hell. And so if you see a video of Erica or a meme of Erica and she's, like, glaring, like, I don't know, give her a little bit of grace, because I can't imagine what she's going through.
I really appreciate that. I think you're absolutely right. That's one of the things that I am curious to see if I can get inside the courthouse. I'm going to try on Thursday morning, is to see those emotions, because I think when one approaches it with a little bit of discernment, it's easy to see how Erica is grieving. If you approach it like it's an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, then you misinterpret it. And that seems to be what many people are doing, unfortunately.
Totally. Well, I'll see you on Thursday, hopefully.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for joining, Ava. Really appreciate you.
Of course. Talk to you later.
Mr. Jay Witt himself said, great seeing you outside of court yesterday, praying for the Kirk family to remain strong in this. Thanks for the updates and recap. Thank you, sir. I enjoyed your stream yesterday as well. If you guys want to leave a super chat below, I'll try to answer your question. We're going to get into the rest of what happened today, because some of it got incredibly dense, and I'm not going to make it as dense. I'm just going to make it as simple as I know how to make it, so that you guys can get the information that you need. We do have a few more clips as well to show you, both of DNA evidence being presented, and we have a clip of Megyn Kelly, actually, that we're going to be showing today, because frankly, there's not a lot of things that make me actually, like, viscerally angry, but this clip made me angry, and so I am going to show it on the show, but we'll save that for the end. First, let's get into the stuff a little bit more. We talked about the defense attorney was essentially trying to throw out evidence that had to do with Tyler Robinson being motivated by Charlie Kirk's religion. And this was a massive, massive part of the morning, maybe an hour and a half of deliberation. It was a huge debate. And the news attorney fought it as well, because we wanted to be able to see these things. Got very intense, probably the most heated I'd seen it so far. And luckily, we were able to see it. Essentially, were all the things that we already knew about. That Tyler Robinson did not like that Charlie Kirk was Christian, that Charlie Kirk had viewpoints that Tyler Robinson believed should get him killed. All things we already knew, but not things that were able to be officially brought in as evidence. Just because someone knows something does not mean it's actually evidence in the trial. It was accepted as evidence. Now, they brought in a third witness very briefly, because the fourth witness is a FBI agent who doesn't live here in Utah. And so they had to, you know, they wanted to get her in quick so she could go back to wherever she lives. I'm not sure where she lives, but they brought in this third witness to kind of set the stage for what the FBI agent was about to show. And this is a State Bureau of Investigation person as well, just like Sergeant Huell was. This person's name, I believe, was Sergeant Famolina. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. Someone in the chat maybe is going to need to correct me. Rachel, maybe you know. I think it was Famolina. I just want to get those actual details correct. Please look at the chat in case I got that wrong. But essentially, she talked about how in her investigation, they recovered a screwdriver on the roof of the building that Tyler Robinson was on. And they also found a gun and a towel in the woods. And this was a Mauser that is capable of shooting a .30-06. It did have a shot round in it, a casing, essentially, because in a bolt action, you can shoot, and unless you release that action, the casing doesn't fly out. One of the reasons why there was no casing on the roof, by the way, so it was consistent with what happened on the roof. And they found both of those things. And then they call in the defense calls in the FBI investigator who's in charge of the forensics. And basically, this FBI agent was in charge of testing the DNA found on this towel that was wrapped around the gun, as well as the screwdriver. This is one of the, maybe the number one, maybe one or two most important pieces of evidence in this case. And so what we saw this afternoon was 3 hours, I kid you not, of the defense trying to throw this out. Thank you. I actually do appreciate this comment. Hi, Josh, it's a rifle, not a gun. You're right. That is an important distinction. I do appreciate that. But this piece of evidence was incredibly important. They spent 3 hours trying to discredit this FBI agent. And so I want to show you what this FBI agent actually presented, and you will see why they did not want this in there. Thank you, Rachel. You have also confirmed it is Agent Falmuina. Falmuina. Thank you. So here is the moment that they actually talked about the DNA evidence. It's a little long, but it's very important.
One of whom is Twiggs. The DNA results from item 7-1 and are 1.7 octillion times more likely if Twiggs and T. Robinson are contributors than if Twiggs and an unknown, unrelated person are contributors.
Thank you. Let's skip down to item 8-1. Do you see that bolded and underlined line there?
Yes.
And this is relating to swabs of the handle area of the screwdriver. Is that right?
Yes.
Will you read those same two paragraphs? They're male DNA ending with contributors.
Male DNA was obtained from item 8-1. Item 8-1 was interpreted as originating from two individuals, one of whom is Twiggs. The DNA results from item 8-1 are 30 quintillion times more likely if Twiggs and T. Robinson are contributors than if Twiggs and an unknown, unrelated person are contributors.
Okay, thank you. A couple of foundational questions before we finish.
All right, so Lance Twiggs, again, is Tyler Robinson's trans lover. Tons of evidence of Lance Twiggs on both the towel and screwdriver. There was also evidence from Tyler Robinson on there of DNA. The towel had a 95% match to Twiggs and 5% to Robinson. The screwdriver had 89% to Twiggs and 11% to Robinson. Again, this is one of the questions I have for the prosecutors, is why did you want to give immunity to Twiggs? It's not like something I'm necessarily critical of per se. It's just I'm like genuinely curious why they decided to go after Robinson and not also Twiggs, since so much of his DNA matched. By the way, those numbers, just to be clear, when I say 95% Twiggs, 5% Robinson, I'm not saying that it was a 95% match to Twiggs. What I'm saying is that out of the DNA they collected and tested, 95% of it matched perfectly to Twiggs and 5% perfectly to Robinson, 89% to Twiggs, 11% to Robinson on the screwdriver. And essentially, what the defense was trying to do was they wanted to argue that her results that she had gotten were not conclusive enough to warrant her conclusion. She says to the prosecutors in the court filings that she is very certain that the DNA matches Twiggs and Robinson, who they were able to swab. She at one time with her supervisor thought there were three sets of DNA and then later revised it to two sets, Lance Twiggs and Tyler Robinson. These are just kind of ancillary points that the defense was bringing up to try to discredit her. Again, they spent over 3 hours trying to do this. It was extremely arduous. I'm not saying that that's not their right, but as Ava alluded to earlier, the judge was starting to get a little ticked off because frankly, they were just making such a big deal out of it when this FBI agent and the prosecution proved that she was quite competent. She knew exactly what she was doing. She was not a novice. And I think she did a very good job presenting the evidence that she had. So that was mostly the end of the day. I mean, when I tell you that they spent 3 hours doing that, I am not joking. There are some extra points that I wanted to include. And again, if you have any questions, please leave them down below. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, guys, if you want to check me out over there. We are currently almost in the top 100 largest news podcasts in the United States, which is massive. We just passed some Fox News ones, which is pretty exciting. I like Fox News, so no diss on them, but I'm a competitive person. Blah Blah Smile said, I think you flipped some of the percentages. Are you sure? I'm pretty sure I got them right. What do you think it was, Blah Blah? I feel weird saying your name like that, but that's what your name is. Paramount went back and listened. The 95 and 70, oh, we're both to Tyler. Okay. Interesting. I was really under the impression, okay, got you. You guys are all saying this. That's my mistake then. I was really under the impression it was the other way around, but you guys seem to say that it was more Tyler. Fair enough. I'll take your word for it. Yeah, I'll take your word for it. Sorry. So I guess that makes perfect sense why they would go after Tyler Robinson and there was less on Twiggs. Either way, they were trying to essentially discredit this FBI agent completely. As I was saying, if you guys have any questions about today, please drop them down below. But here's some extra points. I had some people that actually left an interesting comment in my email about the holster that was found yesterday. I want to read this for you. This is from a listener. I found this very interesting. They said, the holster was found by itself. So the first thing I would ask is if the forensic team determined how long had the holster been there. Then was it located where the alleged shot was fired? Did they determine if a firearm had recently been placed within it? If the holster had a loop type holster, how did the person take it off? Wouldn't the shooter want to reholster the firearm to escape the crowd? These are good questions. And this is going back to what CJ was talking about earlier. How will the defense argue this? I think the prosecutors will bring this up in trial if the defense tries to argue this point. Number two, if someone had fired a pistol shot, was it within 20 to 50 meters of Mr. Kirk? 50 meters would be a long pistol shot. An expert could make that shot accurately, but they would need to be an expert. 100%. I mean, to me, the shot to Charlie Kirk in the neck from the building, and I've been to that building before, by the way. I know what it looks like. I know how far it is. From a hunting rifle, it just seems very probable that someone who has experience hunting would make that shot and would miss and hit his neck instead of his chest or his head. I'm guessing he was aiming for his head. This listener said, type of pistol, more than likely it would have been a revolver. That would mean it would not be able to be suppressed. If an autoloader pistol was used, the spent case would have been found somewhere on the grounds. Either way, a suppressed pistol would likely have a report in 85 to 95 decibel range. If using a revolver, you are likely getting a report of 150 decibels. The bullet would likely be supersonic, meaning people near the shooter would react to the shot being fired, and that would be on the security footage. That's true, and you don't see that. It just doesn't seem likely to me that a pistol shot is likely, especially on those crowded grounds. I agree with you. I think that's a really good, yeah, and Flycast, you're saying a .30-06 from a pistol? No. But one of the things that the defense and the Candace Owens team is trying to argue is that it was not a .30-06, that it was a different round that may have gone in. And for the people saying a .30-06 was found in Charlie, you're absolutely right. It was fragmented. And so people have incorrectly stated that it cannot be identified as a .30-06 round. It is, and it can be identified as that. It just cannot be confirmed or denied that it came from the Mauser that Tyler Robinson hid in the woods. That's what we don't know. One more point before we get to Megyn Kelly, because I do want to show you this. It's just simply that the prosecutors and the witnesses were fantastic. The witnesses were not perfect. The prosecutors were pretty much perfect. They were very close. They did a fantastic job. If this is anything indicative of the trial, you guys don't need to worry. I know there's a lot of people who are scared of a jury not convicting Tyler Robinson. I am less scared every day. I feel very confident that this prosecution is ready for this. Rachel said, you were right about the DNA percentage, sending you the source I verified. Ah, here we go. Maybe I'll be proven right. I love being proven right. As we all are, I'm sure. I'm going to wait until Rachel sends this over because I want to be proven right. And then Gary is going to need to send me an apology for trying to get it wrong. So here's the thing. So Lucy says the prosecutor at the end of the day asked the woman if it was a 95 Robinson and 5 Twigs. She said yes. Here's the thing. Maybe we heard different parts because, frankly, during the whole hearing, a lot of people have said incorrect things and then later actually, you know, said, oh, strike that from the record. I misspoke. This was the actual correct thing. And so perhaps Rachel Carr Media Company at gmail.com. You can send that over. Thank you. But it's possible that they said the wrong thing and just needed to correct it. So maybe I heard the wrong thing and Gary heard the right thing, or you guys heard the right thing, or vice versa. We probably heard what we heard and are both right about what we heard, but just wrong about the facts. With that, while we're waiting to get an actual confirmation on the DNA, because it's a really important point, I think, let's react to this Megyn Kelly clip. Here's what she put out on her show today to talk about this Tyler Robinson case that she has been covering.
Of this case for our audience. We're not going to assume anything. We're going to go into this with defense attorneys who will argue on Tyler's behalf or from the defense perspective, with prosecutors who will argue from the prosecution's perspective, and from those who think you know, it's possible this guy had absolutely nothing to do with it. And we'll take a very fair look at this case as we go on. I just don't care about any of the bullshit around this. I care about Charlie, care about his family, and I care about being very factual.
I don't even know what to say. I just care about Charlie. I just want to be factual, you guys. That's why I've been promoting the conspiracy theory that Israel had to do with Charlie Kirk's assassination. That's why I've been unwilling to go out and condemn Candace Owens for attacking Erica Kirk. Really? Does anyone buy this? Does her own audience actually think that she's ever been factual? I mean, even if you think Megyn Kelly is correct in some of her conspiracy theories, none of you could possibly believe that she's just playing it by the book. She's going to take a real honest look at this because that's what she's done over the last 6 months. Total crap. And it frustrates me. It's the perfect microcosm for who Megyn Kelly is. She just follows whatever's happening. She saw the trans movement in 2017 and she went, yeah, this is obviously going to be popular because we see all the LGBTQ stuff booming. Let's just keep going with that. I'm going to host some LGBTQ trannies on my show. Oh, Trump's really popular now? I'm going to stop hating on Trump. I'm going to go with Trump now. Oh, the Daily Wire's doing really well. I'm going to get in with Ben Shapiro and do really well with him. Oh, Candace Owens is making a butt ton of money off of this. I'm not going to go out against her. I'm going to keep talking about this. Oh, Tucker Carlson has this huge Muslim audience. I'm going to get a huge Muslim audience. Oh, there are these people who are telling the truth and they're doing good journalism and they are getting a lot of views even talking about the Tyler Robinson trial. I'm going to do the same thing. That's what she's doing here. It's so frustrating to see the inauthenticity. And I just don't know how she's able to actually look into her camera and say these things. I don't know. I'm just curious. I'm curious what you guys say. You know, I'll look in the comments because, man, I just can't believe she had the audacity to say that. We do have one super chat. If you want your comment featured, you have a question for me, leave a super chat. It does help support me. Jason said, I'm so happy Jillian Michaels got back to you. I was thrilled when she first mentioned you in a video. She's very smart. She loved Charlie and Charlie loved her. Hope your chat goes well. Thank you. I'm a huge fan of Jillian. I think she's a fantastic voice. She's a fan of the show. I'm a fan of her show. I will be on her show on Friday, most likely. I'll be sending in some things on Friday. We'll see if it appears on Friday, though. I think it will. So you can stay tuned for that. And I think we're going to be having a larger chat maybe next week or in the coming weeks. So that's pretty exciting. Very excited about that. Megan, you're a liar and a money lover. Yeah. Sorry, just looking through the questions, the chat here. If you have any questions, please leave them down below. Yeah, thank you, Captain Jax. Nailed it on Megan. It's just so clear. I mean, it's clear as day. I just don't understand how you can like debase yourself like that. It's just embarrassing. I mean, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to be provocative with this language, but like, she is a whore. She's a prostitute. She sells herself for whatever makes the most money. And I just think there's no lower business that you could be in. If you're selling yourself for money, and what I mean by that, I'm not saying you shouldn't be marketable. I'm saying you will do anything it takes to get money. Does not matter what it is. Just say the word. Here's my body. Here's my mouth. You can have it. I'll just do it. That's just the worst thing you can be. It's the most embarrassing thing possible. And in this business, you're doing it on camera for everyone to see. That's what's so crazy. Your typical prostitute's not on camera. They're in a motel. They're in the dark. You can't see them. Megyn Kelly is broadcasting her prostitution. Blah, blah, said, I confirm Twiggs 5%, Robinson 5%. Dang it. So that means I'm wrong. I still don't believe you, though. I'm going to be like a Candace Owens fan and say, nope, receipts, receipts. I don't trust you guys. No, I trust. I believe it. And I think I may have an email coming in just a second with some more information. Guys, if you want to call into the show next time, go to carmediacompany@gmail.com. I'm going to send you the link. I want you to call in. It's fun to engage with you. This person said she used to be an attorney. Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah, I mean, I respect a lot of attorneys, but that does not mean, you know, you're by virtue of your occupation, that does not mean that you're smart. And Megyn Kelly is a great example of that, because somehow Megyn Kelly and Ben Shapiro both, and yet Ben Shapiro is like a certified genius. Megyn Kelly is not a certified genius. A few more things, guys, before we end the stream today. If you missed it at the beginning, I'm going to be in the courthouse. And the reason why I know that is because I'm going to show up at 2:30 a.m. on Thursday morning to get in. So I'm going to be there for like hours on end doing nothing. I'm going to bring a little camp chair and try to sleep. We'll see. I'll do a few interviews while I'm there. But while I'm in the courthouse, I'll still be streaming live. You can see the entire court case, the preliminary hearing. It's streamed live on this channel. There's no commentary over it. And the group chat is actually good. It's not full of crazy people. There have been no Candace crazies. If they are, we boot them because we don't have time for that. And so if you just want a quiet place to listen to the preliminary hearing, you can go there. I'm not going to be in the chat on Thursday, though, because I'm going to be inside. You can't have any phones on the inside, just so you guys know. But afterwards, I will be going live. Tomorrow, again, don't miss this. The preliminary hearing starts at 1 p.m. Mountain Time. It does not start at 9 a.m. It's just half a day. We're still going to go live, though, and we're going to have you guys call in, and we're going to talk and summarize what happened yesterday, okay? We're going to be doing it all week. We've got one more super chat before we end today. Remember the Lord first. Beautiful name. Great name to end on. Thanks for being honest in this pit of vipers. I appreciate you guys. My pledge to you is that I will always be honest. And when I do make a mistake, I will correct it. People tell me when I make mistakes. I do make them all the time. I'm imperfect. I am not an attorney. I'm not necessarily what I would consider to be like a true expert. I just try to do the work and share my opinion. So thank you. Appreciate you guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Again, 1 p.m. the stream will start. And then at 5 p.m., we will start the analysis. You guys are welcome to call in. Just go to carmediacompany@gmail.com. And really quick before we go, I did get my email that says the examiner said in the testimony that 95% of the DNA on the screwdriver and 89% was of Lance Twiggs. It has resulted in an onslaught of theories around Lance Twiggs' role in the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Thank you. And it was confirmed by Reuters and a couple other ones. So I'm hearing that I'm correct. I think I may have been proved correct, you guys. We may have to do triple checks tomorrow to make sure, but I think I was right. Nothing better than being right. All right. Good night, guys. Love you so much. God bless.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.